Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
Episode 5 of Cosmos Magazine, issue number 83. So after some pretty ordinary article, on quantum biology, so did no services at all. We have this one when Skylab came crashing down. Now, as I think the article before did, gave some really interesting insights. It's really worthwhile for a scientist to read this because it gives you some. The article before is about Einstein and Eddington and about how what the actual Eddington results showed. And the difference between celebrity and science, the science view of things. Okay, so this is about Skylab, and I can remember Skylab quite well. And it's sort of like this filler in the world between Apollo and the space shuttle. 4 decades ago, NASA's Pride and Joy plummeted to Earth. No one was hurt, but that was down to luck, not judgment. Drew Turney reports. The swampy coast of East Florida and the scarred desert of Western Australia couldn't have felt further apart, culturally and geographically, in the late 1970s, but one July night reminded us in spectacular fashion that we're all passengers on spaceship Earth. So this is referring to it. I remember when it did come down. I think Prince Philip or Prince Charles went out to inspect a piece of coral. It burnt a hole in someone's corrugated roof a tiny bit. I wonder if they say that here. It was interesting that when you talk about things, you talk to it and you read the article on, so you can sort of... a lot of people poo-poo your thoughts afterwards, but it's interesting when you think ahead and doing it. It was the night the first manned US space station came home. Skylab was the last program to take off from the Kennedy Space Center famed Launch Complex 39 before it was decommissioned and retooled for the Space Shuttle program, which would dominate America's space aspirations for the next generation. It was also the last unmanned mission to lift off from Complex 39 until February 2017, when current tenants Space Shuttle X launched the CRS 10. So there were Space Shuttle launches from there, but this is the only one. SpaceX is uncrewed so far. Carried aloft on a modified Saturn V, the same rocket that carried Armstrong, Aldrin and Collins to the moon, it was the result of NASA's A Wet Workshop space station concept to use a spent rocket body as a living working quarters. The idea had come from the German rocket scientist Wernher von Braun in the mid-60s, long after the Operation Paperclip spirited the best of the brightest minds from the Nazi war effort to America. With the interest in space travel waning and the popularity of the US government plummeting thanks to the quagmire in Vietnam, budget cuts scuppered further moon landings to the Saturn V was freed up, and a Saturn V was freed up. NASA reworked von Braun's plans for hardware available, and Skylab was born. After successful gestation, it had a troubled delivery. Its protective shield, sunshade, and one of its main solar panels were damaged during the launch on the 14th of May 1973. So it's like, I think it's barely 6 months before it was launched up. It's pretty warm. Fragments from the destroyed sunshade stopped the other solar panels from deploying, leaving things overheated and unpowered. Skylab 2, the first follow-up mission, had a lot of repair work to do just a few weeks later. So I think Skylab 2 would be the actual astronauts going up. Skylab was soon back in business, however, weighing 77 tonnes and measuring 25 metres in length and about 6.5 metres in diameter. That's amazing distance, but it's not very far. That's the living room. You know, that's about 2 living rooms. It packed a lot of living and working activity into its compact size, with about a quarter of the dimensions and a third of the pressurized volume of the International Space Station. So the International Space Station is actually bloody cramped. It's like a domestic, small little domestic house up there, and it smells like a sock, I'm told. 80 experiments yielded some 300 findings covering everything from human vertebral function to copper, aluminium, eutectrics, whatever that means. Oh, that's how they go together. Some topics were suggested by the US high school students who designed the experiments and analysed the data when it was reported back. God, that's just the most mind-boggling thing I've ever come across. Skylab would change direction and altitude without liquid propellant, using large spinning gyroscopes which save a lot of fuel. But the real killer app was the solar observatory. That is the most amazing thing. Changing altitude with gyroscopes, how does that work? I suppose you can imagine that if you're there and you spin up a gyroscope in the opposite direction to your over-angular... I think what happens, say, if you increase your angular momentum around the... unit angular momentum, by increasing speeding it up, I just find it hard to imagine, because do you do two counter-rotating gyros? I wonder how that works. I'm just trying to imagine, you've got L of something orbiting, how do you actually, if you speed it up, I can't imagine that being a big effect. So I can imagine, how do you speed up gyroscopes without getting the entire thing tumbling forward? So I can imagine that as you spin the top half of your aircraft, which is going slightly higher up in altitude, is going faster, and the lower half is going lower. So if you spin up faster to get the angular momentum to be the same, you go to a lower altitude. I find that really hard to understand. Okay, there are as many as 10 film and still cameras on board. One of them was a television camera that recorded video electronically to be transferred on magnetic tape and sent back to Earth by radio. Wow. It was a mid-70s version of emailing a JPEG. Isn't that incredible? Well, you can imagine it would Vidicon to magnetic tape, and the magnetic tape. Oh, wow! None of the crew was terribly interested in movies or games, so NASA provided books and music. It also pioneered new approaches to food after Apollo astronauts had complained bitterly about the cubes and squeeze tubes of space race age. They engineered a toilet and a shower. However, as vacuuming excess water out of the air so it didn't damage the equipment was tricky, wet washcloths were used just as often. Each of the three crew members had a small sleeping area with a curtain, sleeping bag, and locker. But despite all the various concessions to comfort, Skylab was no paradise. Bending over to put on socks in minimal gravity sustained strained stomach muscles, utensils, and bits of food floated away, and the gas or drinking water led to considerable flatulence. Wow. Well, that's interesting. They farted their things off. It's interesting, the story of urination, because Yuri Gagarin urinated in space, and the first thing he saw in space was this urine floating past. There's a map of it, the solar panels. Oh. Wow. Very interesting. Sorry, you can't see it, of course. Experiments and repairs and exercise filled the crew's day, and after dinner, it was time for household chores and preparing for the next day's work. Instructions radio from mission control were printed out on a spools of paper that sometimes ended up 15 metres long. Imagine that! And despite the dart set, playing cards and their books and music, Staring out the window back towards Earth was the most popular pastime. Skylab cameras took 150,000 exposures and 173,000 frames of film across 6 years of flight, 171 days of which were crewed. Wow. Well, really, 6 years of flight. That's less than... That's only a few months. It's only crewed for a few months. Wow. All were stored in five aluminium vaults to protect against radiation that would otherwise cause the film to fog over. My God, Father, that's incredible. The largest vault weighed just over a ton, and the 80-kilogram piece of aluminium recovered after the re-entry, the heaviest piece of wreckage found, was thought to be its door. Skylab orbit. Wow! Oh! I do know that I heard from Australian scientists that the astronauts reported that their eyes were scintillating with radiation. Some of the stuff, and people in high radiation areas know that they're fucked when their eyes begin to glow in the dark. Skylab orbited Earth nearly 2,500 times during its three crewed missions, each breaking the record for human spaceflight set by the Soviet Union's space station Salyut in 71. The record for Skylab 4, so it's the first one is going up there, and 2, 3 and 4 are the people up there, was 84 days, would stand until broken until Norman Thorogood's 155 days in 1995. With its birth pass already undergoing a massive retrofit, the US space program knee-deep in the next phase of the spacecraft technology with the space shuttle, Skylab's days might have seemed numbered. In fact, the three missions had only used 17 of the 24 months' worth of supplies on life support. Wow. And the plans were drawn up for further research, including having the space shuttle propel it into a higher orbit where it would perform a whole new swathe of experiments. The Skylab 4 crew had left the hatch unlocked and the bag of supplies to welcome the next mission. Skylab wasn't supposed to reach the atmosphere till 1983, giving the space shuttle program plenty of time to mount a mission to retrofit, reposition and repurpose it. It was still drifting about 450 kilometres up when the ground control re-established contact in March 1978 to recharge its batteries. However, it became clear by the end of the year that no shuttle mission would be ready in time, and the orbit had degraded much faster than planned. NASA unwittingly created the media event of 1979 by abandoning the Skylab to its fate. Wow, what could you do with that? It's incredible. Public interest already high because of the Soviets' loss of the early 1978 Cosmos 954, a nuclear-powered reconnaissance satellite that came down along a 600-kilometre patch path near the Great Slave Lake west of the Canadian Arctic, prompting a 124,000-square-kilometre operation by US and Canadian authorities to recover the irradiated debris. Where the world now wondered would the nearly 100 tons of space junk land. NASA calculated one in 152 chance that the debris would hit a human, but only one in seven chance that it might strike a city of 10,000 or more. And the public, still primed for all things space thanks to the events of the Apollo and global phenomena of Star Wars in a couple of years before, loved every minute of it. Hats and t-shirts sold by thousands. Residents in Bellevue, Nebraska, painted a large target on the end of their cul-de-sac to give the Skylab something to aim for. Filipino President Ferdinand Marcos appeared on national TV to reassure everyone that they were safe. The San Francisco Examiner offered $10,000 to the first person to deliver a piece of Skylab wreckage to their offices. Re-entry was estimated to start between the 10th and 14th of July 1979. Its final hours, NASA radioed the last commands to the Re-entry Spy Lab aiming for the ocean 800 kilometres south of Cape Town, South Africa. Re-entry began at 4:37 UTC on the 11th of July, almost 10 years to the day, Neil Armstrong's giant leap to mankind. But because of a 4% calculation error and the fact that Skylab didn't burn up as fast as NASA had accounted for, they were way off. Esperance is still a sleepy beach town along the Western Australian southern coast, about 700 kilometres southwest of Perth. A few hundred southwest, oh yeah, wow, west of Perth, or oh, south, a little bit west, but 700 kilometres. A few hundred kilometres north, and you'll find the township like Norseman, Ballinas, and eventually Kalgoorlie, all of them characteristic of the country's inhospitable desert interior. With global interest in the re-entry high, residents around the region had word Skylab might be passing nearby, and the lucky ones gathered at Esperance Town to look out just past midnight and got the light and sound show to remember. Skylab entered the atmosphere almost 29,000 kilometres an hour. Its orbital speed of 28,000 kilometres per hour, plus the effect of the Earth's gravity pulling it down faster the lower it fell. But the time it approached Australia from the Southern Ocean, the friction had heated it up to 1,600 degrees Celsius and slowed it down to around 400 kilometres per hour. Wow. Still 400 kilometres an hour. Oh, it's still faster than the speed of sound. Oh, what's the speed of sound? Speed of sound is 1,000. It's less than the speed of sound. It's 400 kilometres an hour. I think commercial aircraft travelled at 600 kilometres an hour. So it's going slow. It passed over Esperance like a fireball of different colours as the glass, plastic and metal paint burned. Wow. Dear. There's someone on a huge piece of Skylab shaking the town a half a minute later with a sonic boom. Well, I suppose it's going faster than speed. I think there's something wrong with there with the speed. It's not 400 kilometres an hour. Racing overhead towards Bologna and Rowena, 700 and 470 kilometres northeast, respectively. Okay. It had been just 6 kilometres up, much lower than expected, while still intact. Its smouldering remains slowing to a near vertical descent in the middle of nowhere. The nearest civilization was the airstrip of Pullenridge Lake, nearly 200 kilometres west. Next morning, Canberra assured the nation Skylab had fallen into the ocean, but Esperance residents, including 17-year-old truck driver Stan Thornton, who'd been at the lookout with his sister and her boyfriend, knew better. His mother had heard noises on the tin roof of the chook shed, but that wasn't until the next morning that he found 20 fragments looking much like charcoal from the barbecue on the back lawn. There you go. Isn't that crazy? Thornton's boss, who picked him up for a week later that morning, had heard about the $10,000 competition on the radio. And that was the next day that Thornton, who'd never previously been outside his home state, found himself on a Qantas plane for California. He presented the fragments to the office of the San Francisco Examiner, then spent a week sightseeing while experts at NASA from Huntsville, Alabama, determined that they were, in fact, balsa wood from the Skylab's insulation. Wow! There you go, balsa wood. There you go, balsa wood. Is it? We sent up a balsa wood in space? My godfather. Thornton was filmed receiving a giant check, by a Channel 7 crew near that had flown from Perth for the occasion. But that wasn't the end of the story. Capitalising on global interest in his coastal community, Shire President Mev Andre issued $400 fine to the US Department for littering a council ranger representing it with a flourish to NASA official who had flown down under to retrieve more wreckage for research. NASA never paid the paid, but 30 years later, in 2009, a Californian radio DJ asked listeners to donate the money to clear the debt. He was invited to Esperance and was given the keys to the city for his efforts, even though the Shire Council had written the money off for years before. NASA representation for Western Australia now just not just to humbly accept their littering fine, but also to retrieve their wreckage for further research. Some is back in the US on display at various NASA and museum facilities, including the battered oxygen tank that enjoyed a starring role on the stage during the 1976 Miss World pageant a week or so later in Perth. It was an occasion no less dramatic that Skylab's return went. Moment after the crowning of the Venezuela's first ever winner, the stage collapsed. It supposedly had more to do with the number of people rather than the oxygen tank. But Miss Malta got a concussion, and Miss Turkey suffered a severe bruising. Apparently, Miss Japan was quite traumatized. Today, Esperance Shire Museum contains over 70 items relating to Skylab, including pieces of the vehicle itself. Staff recently have been working hard to tidy up and properly catalogue everything that became along with the rest of the world. They're going to remember that night 40 years ago with a piece of human spaceflight history rained down in the small town. Chukchev is a great example of the wonder, delight and whimsy that connects people and places who'd otherwise have nothing whatsoever to do with each other. And ultimately, that's the human venturing into space is all about. Well, that's just a really interesting little story. And you notice that my reading was a bit hard at the end because the light is failing here at the moment out here in this cloud chair. And it's a beautiful Australia at the moment. So that's a piece of Skylab. I don't know if anyone can remember it. And I don't know. It's an interesting story, I think.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.